You ready to go?
Yes.
Okay. In 1988, in June or thereabouts, there was a transition from Old Parliament House to the Australian Parliament House. What was the move like from your point of view? Did the work arrangements or procedures change working at Australian Parliament House compared to the period you were at Old Parliament House? Or?
I wouldn't say that the procedures changed, but certainly the atmosphere changed. In Old Parliament House, staff were very much on top of each other. I think I worked out at one stage that if I stretched my arm long enough, I could touch four members of staff in Old Parliament House. In the new Parliament House, I had a little office of my own and there was much more space around. You lost something of the intimacy of work in the office. And that had its downsides. It also had its good sides because it meant you were less interrupted by what was going on around the place. But Old Parliament House did have that intimacy that is one of the great losses, I think, in going to the new building. The new building, it was an office. It didn't have a. It felt more like an ordinary office, government office. It didn't have the buzz of the old Parliament House. So that's you felt that even within individual offices, even more so when you moved out into the corridors.
Did you feel that any that this actually impacted in some way on the work you were doing? Or was it something you just adapted to?
It's something you adapted to, you had to adapt to. I don't think it's made a great deal of difference, and we adapted pretty quickly, I think, in a ministerial office. It certainly would have made a difference to the role of parliamentary liaison officer because a lot of the work there was done really in corridors, meeting people, keeping up with people that you met in corridors.
As working for Clive Holding in that capacity, did you actually have any direct dealings with the parliamentary liaison officer at the time?
No, I didn't. No.
So
Uh,
in
hard, hardly any, because he had little direct business in the Parliament other than at question time. He didn't have much legislation to deal with.
Did in your job working for again for Clive Holding, did you what sort of equipment did you use? If any, did you compare into computers
No, we
or?
weren't. Well, I certainly wasn't into computers at that stage. I didn't have a computer to use. No, not at that stage.
What interaction did you have with staff in other sections? That thinking back now, both to Old Parliament House and to the Australian Parliament House, working for Holding again in that period, did you have much contact interaction with staff from other areas?
I'm not quite sure what you have in mind by other areas. You mean other ministers' offices,
And
the staff of the house?
all both and all, yes.
In working with Clyde Holding, I had quite a lot of contact with his Senate counterpart, Margaret Reynolds, and her staff. But not much with other ministerial officers, and very little occasion to have any contact with staff of the House of Reps departments. Yes,
What about
but
contact with colleagues, you might call them, outside work? Did you have any, had any special friendships, any special contact with people developed over the years?
you speak, are you intending here this to be contacts from Parliament House that I carried on
Social
outside,
contacts outside,
that I ca
yeah.
contacts from Parliament House that I carried on outside? No, not really. No. No, in that sense it was no, it was not an area in which I developed ongoing friendships.
So there wasn't a social club or anything like that based around Old Parliament House, Australian Parliament House? That
well, if there was, I certainly didn't have time for it.
Well, that's a good answer. Were you ever a member of a union while you worked at all that?
As a public servant, I had been a member of the relevant union, and I was throughout that time, as I recall. Actually, I might have ended my association with the union by the time of my employment with Clyde Holding, because I did become very dissatisfied with them, with the union at one stage in my career, and I just don't recall when that was. It may well have been before that time.
During when you were working again for Clive Holding, did your workloads change between sitting weeks or when the minister was away, for example?
Oh, yes. Well, if the minister was away, your workload was could be lighter. Not necessarily so. It depended where he was. If he were overseas, for instance, then you had an acting minister to look after, so that didn't make any real difference. If he were in Melbourne, then you would have to liaise with the Melbourne office, or maybe even be down there yourself. There was a difference. You did tend to work longer hours while the Parliament was sitting, because the minister would be there, and the minister would be meeting members and other ministers, and would want you to be there for most of the time, or perhaps other senior staff to be there. So, but it was still pretty busy outside sitting times, pretty busy. Certainly 9-10 hour days would be, you would regard that as normal to easy outside sitting hours. Mm.
You mentioned that you thought there were between 8 and 10 or thereabouts staff in Clive Holding's office.
Yes.
Would you describe your management style in keeping them all sort of working, doing the work that you wanted the office to do?
I had the great good fortune to have staff who were all very motivated. They were all very keen on their jobs. They knew their jobs well. I did not feel at any time that I needed to supervise them with a heavy hand. I needed rather to know what they were doing, to be available to help them. If their workload became a problem for them, or if there were issues to deal with. And so it was. It was a pretty light job in terms of staff management, because, as I say, they were all very, very much motivated people. There was never any need to push or to counsel, and in that sense, I suppose I was fortunate. I might be taking it a little bit easy on some people there. There were some who were doing things in a way that I didn't altogether like, and I won't mention any names here. But it was something that we managed to get around anyway.
Now, working with Clive Holding, how did the relationship between you and him work in practice? How and why, and in which way did he seek your advice, for example?
I think it's fair to say that my relationships with Clyde Holding were, my working relationships were not easy, and that was essentially because Clyde was very much politically oriented, and the role of his head of staff, certainly as I saw it, had to include him getting through the administrative workload of a minister, which he didn't like very much, and he tended to shirk away from it, I have to say. And I found it difficult in getting him to keep his nose to the grindstone. That, as I think I mentioned earlier on, was something that not only I had a difficulty with, the Prime Minister eventually came to the conclusion that this was not the job for Clyde, and moved him on to another job. So it was not an easy relationship. He, for his part, I think, saw me as too much of the public servant and not sufficiently concerned about his political life. I felt that he had staff, his personal staff, who was particularly in the his electorate office, who were there to look after his political activities. So it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time, and in the end, we agreed that it didn't really work out too well. So that was part of company.
So that was not didn't work for him, and it didn't work for you.
It didn't work for him, and it certainly didn't work for me.
During this period of time, again, how did you see the relationship between the private office and the Prime Minister's office, and in particular, and office and staff as well? There must have been some contact with the Prime Minister's office, and
between Clyde Holding's office and the Prime Minister's.
That's
office.
Right.
Yes, and I was the main point of contact there.
Yes, that's the what I'm referring to.
Certainly, the main point of contact, and there was quite a lot of contact with the senior staff in the Prime Minister's office, particularly as this was the period where the government's multicultural agenda was being developed, and that was being developed within the Prime Minister's department by Peter Shergold, who actually later became my boss in Aboriginal Affairs, in ATSIC. So there was quite a lot of contact between myself and senior staff, mainly in relation to the development of the multicultural agenda, and getting Clyde to do what he was expected to do on that. What he was expected by the Prime Minister's office to be doing, to a lesser extent on immigration matters as such, because the private office, the Prime Minister's office, didn't get as heavily involved in the development of immigration policy or in individual immigration cases. It was mainly on the multicultural side, affairs side of things.
Who were the people in the Prime Minister's office you dealt primarily with?
The names I recall primarily were Sandy Holway, who was the Prime Minister's head of staff, and John Bowen, who was one of his senior advisors. I can't recall his exact name. He later became, I think he became the ambassador to Germany, or a very senior man in the embassy there, anyway.
During the same time working with in Holding's office, what was the relationship between your office as his chief of staff or working as senior staff member and the government departments? How did that work out?
Well, of course, the main point of liaison was with the Department of Immigration and Ethnic Affairs. And I had a lot of contact with the secretary of the department and the other senior members of the department, and that worked out. I think that worked out well. I managed to get good relationships going with those people. They, of course, wanted things from the minister, wanted my assistance in getting the minister to lift particular subject matters up to the top of the of his pile of things, and so there was a lot of liaison there involved in the role that I had.
With a, obviously a high intensity of work in an office like the minister's, what were your coping strategies, both during work and away from work? How did you deal with it yourself?
How did I cope with it? Well, it's... I don't know that I developed particular coping strategies. I had long accepted that as a senior public servant, you worked long hours, you did the best you could, you... If you got overloaded, well, you sought to avoid letting it get you down. And, well, I managed. I managed. Look, I coped by coping. That sounds highly, highly simplistic, I know, but one does. One does.
What about the relationship between your office and yourself and members of the press?
Yes.
Did the minister, did he have separate media secretaries, or was that part of your duties?
In Clyde Holding's office, Clyde Holding had a separate press secretary, so that my own involvement with the press was pretty limited. It was mainly left to him, to Peter Cotton. But I did have some liaison with the press, particularly if Peter wasn't around. Of course, they would look to me to see if they could get an answer to their questions out of me. I had more of a relationship with the press as the parliamentary liaison officer than I did, I think, as the head of Clyde Holding staff, because he had his own press secretary.
Mm. Limited this to Holding's time, office. Did parliamentarians or others from outside your office seek to obtain confidential information from you or your staff? And if so, how did you deal with that?
Oh yes, they did. They did, particularly on the raft load of individual cases that were put before the minister for final decision. You know, he was the final court of appeal, as I said earlier, for people who wanted to get their relatives or friends the right to migrate to Australia. And the individual members of the community would approach their members of parliament who would come along to see the minister. And if the minister wasn't there, or if the minister didn't have time to talk to them, they would talk to individual members of the staff who were dealing with the cases. That tended to be more the departmental liaison officers who were who dealt with the individual casework and managed the individual casework more than me. But they would talk to me as well.
Mm.
And, well, you told them what you could, but if the matter was before the minister, the matter was before the minister, and there was nothing else, you know, ultimately that you could say other than that it was in the minister's pile, and you would perhaps see if it could be lifted up in the list and draw the member's interest in the matter to the minister's attention.
Mm.
And you would do that. You'd find yourself doing a lot of that, and the poor minister, of course, would find himself overwhelmed by the pressures to deal with cases.
Mm. Did your general view of and about politics change from the time working with Holding at all?
No, I don't think so, and I don't think it did really, because I had quite a lot of association with politicians, of course, and with politics in my period as the parliamentary liaison officer, and working in the cabinet office, and just, you know, generally working with senior public servants and with ministers in my time as an officer of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet.
Did you ever feel uncomfortable about what you were doing in any of the jobs there, in a sort of philosophical or moral sense?
Well, certainly there were times when one did things, one found oneself doing things that one would not, you know, in a way, or particular things that one would not have chosen to do, but if that was what you were required to do, if that was as a result of ministerial or government decision, then if you couldn't change that decision, then you went along with it. That's part of what being a public servant is. You know, you implement the decisions of others. You advise when asked to advise. If you don't like the decision, then you live with it. If you can't live with it, then you go and get another job.
In the later years that you, after you'd left the office working for Clive Holding, in the years you worked for the Department of Aboriginal Affairs and ATSTIC, did you have any contacts or connections with the Australian Parliament House?
Yes, I did, and quite a lot of contact in my days in one period of my time in Aboriginal Affairs, and that was when we were setting up the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, ATSIC. I became, at that time, the head of the task force that was setting up ATSIC, and as such, I was directly responsible to the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, Gerry Hand. So I spent a lot of time in Australian Parliament House while developing the legislation for to create ATSIC, and in getting that through both houses of the Parliament, and particularly getting it through the Senate. It was a very, very long process getting it through the Senate. I think the legislation to establish ATSIC was, at the time, something like the second or third most amended legislation that there had been. I spent a lot of time in Parliament House for the most of 1989 and the early part of 1990, working on the establishment of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission.
Well, in your notes, you mentioned that there are a number of ministers who stand out in your memories all the time, and obviously for reasons which I'd like to hear more about. The first one you mentioned is Red Swartz, Minister for Repatriation in the early years from 1961 to 64.
Can we just take another break here? I'm sorry.
Yes.